This is The Mitch Gray Show, where we are bringing the art of humanity back to leadership. Subscribe to The Mitch Gray Show wherever you listen to podcasts. Also, subscribe to our YouTube channel, Mitch Gray Media, where you'll find each of our episodes and other resources that will equip, inspire, and empower you to lead well. And now, The Mitch Gray Show.
What is up, brothers and sisters? Welcome to The Mitch Gray Show. Thank you again for listening. I am Mitch Gray, your host, small business and leadership consultant, author of How to Hire and Keep Great People, and love to have fun on this show. Another great guest for you today. I always say this with every person that comes on because it becomes true. My new friend, Micah Lawrence. Micah, welcome to The Mitch Gray Show.
Hey, Mitch. Thank you. I'm happy to be here. Excited to talk to you.
Yeah. Every single person that comes on, we build these great relationships and people always ask me, what's the best thing you get out of podcasting? I'm like, I gain all these new friends and it's great. And we have fun. And I've actually met a few of you in real life. And you and I were talking pre-show. Maybe that'll happen with us too. That'd be awesome.
I'd love to.
So yeah, cool. Micah, you are a corporate management dropout. Love that. Turned career leadership relationship coach. You are a Gallup certified strengths coach and a believer in the power of positive psychology. Man, that's a great bio. And I know I left a line or two out of the end, but that's enough for people to know what you do. So let's, I'd love to start with a big question. This episode for all of our listeners is going to be a little different than normal. I've actually gone on a few shows and done this. We're going to kind of reverse the roles. We're going to role play a little bit. And I actually took a assessment, the Gallup, you can tell me what it's called specifically in a minute, but I took the assessment. And so you're going to kind of take over the show, role play with me a little bit. But before we go there, I want to start with a big question.
Sure.
And that big question is, what does it feel like to be a corporate management dropout? That's your big question, my friend.
Okay. Well, that's a good question. What does it feel like? It's funny. I think I knew I wanted to own my own business for the entire time that I had a corporate job. It was odd. Like, I got into the corporate world because it was the responsible thing to do. And I had a family. And I knew, like, you know, I want to provide for my family and I want to have a stable job. So I'm going to get a corporate job. So I got into project management and IT for the first few years, started doing strategic planning type roles and ended up doing strategic planning roles for the most of my career in my corporate life. And then I finally just realized that if I waited too long to try to become an entrepreneur and start my own business, I probably would never do it. And it felt like in 2020 was when I made the decision to leave my corporate job, which seems like, looking back, a lot more people have done that than I realized would be doing it. Right. So it wasn't just me, it was a lot of people, but it was almost like maybe it was just realizing that life is short and, you know, a pandemic, I think, can do that to you, help you realize that life is precious. And I didn't want to go any longer without at least attempting to run my own business and do more coaching and consulting and do what I love and still try to provide for my family. And so I pulled the trigger. And I mean, to answer your question, how does it feel? It's been the best decision of my life. Like, I love what I do. And I don't have the, you know, the Sunday night regret that I have to go to work tomorrow on Monday. It feels fantastic. I've loved every minute of it.
Yeah, it's interesting how tragedy can pull out the desperation in us, you know, for better or worse. Sometimes that desperation becomes action that leads to more desperation. And sometimes that desperation becomes action that leads to a passageway that changes everything, you know, for the good. And it's incredible. I can't count how many times someone has said to me, oh, I always wanted to write a book, or I've always thought about owning my own business, or I love sewing and I've always thought about doing more of that. Or, and you could just go down, you know, before the show, we were talking about music and I used to play quite a bit of music, and how many people said to me, whether it shows or, you know, in private, I've always thought about trying to do something with music or whatever. And it's like, you know, at what point do you get to the intersection of life like you did and just say, I've got to jump. I've got to jump. And you know, I think the pendulum is swung, right? To where it's like, well, but it's got to make sense. But it can't make so much sense that you never do it.
Right. It's scary. I mean, it's scary. And
it is.
What I've noticed is that it's not as scary once you're in it as it seemed like it was going to be before you pull the trigger or before you jump. And that's the scary part.
Yeah. We make up so many things in our minds that never happen. The great poet John Mayer said, I am an architect of things that haven't happened yet. And that's in a song called A Place to Call Home by, again, the great poet John Mayer. And so I love that statement because it's so true. We build up all these things in our minds.
Yeah, that's
and it's
profound.
Like, that's probably never going to happen. 90% of that stuff is most likely never going to happen. So, well, that's why I asked that question, because I know there are a lot of people listening that the last 18 months, you know, if they were or weren't thinking about making a change, they've made a change, whether by their own choice or the choice that was made for them. And so, I love when someone can testify and say, hey, you got to take a risk. You got one life to live. And in this form, at least what happens after this life, everyone can debate. But all I know is we're here. So go for it. See what happens. So yeah.
Couldn't agree more.
So Micah, tell us about the Gallup strengths-based, the assessments that you do. And we're going to get into a little bit more about how you use those. And that's where the role play is going to come in. So this should be fun. But kind of lay the foundation a little for us. What in the world does that mean? People may have heard of Gallup studies, Gallup polls. Those have all been out for a very long time. So lay a little foundation about, you know, why you began using that, what kind of piqued your interest, how you use it, and then we'll kind of move forward.
Cool. Love it. Yeah. So most people have heard of the company Gallup. So like you said, they do a lot of research. They do polls, things like that. If you have worked in the corporate world, the Gallup's tool, which is a self-assessment called the Clifton Strengths Assessment, or another term that people are familiar with is Strengths Finder. Mm. It's just a questionnaire that you take that helps you learn for yourself based on your responses to these questions. What are your natural strengths, your top talents that you can leverage in both personal and professional life? And so this assessment was based on decades of research. They've been doing research for over 50 years and the research continues, but it resulted in this assessment where they thought, after learning what has made people successful, which was the foundation of their research, like what is the good in people that has led to them being able to be successful? They drew out all of that research and decided that there were 34 strengths or talents that come naturally to people, and nobody has all of them, but everybody has some of them. Mm-hmm. And for each person, your strengths are different. And so their research and some of the books that they've written have been about how do you leverage your natural talents, your natural strengths, to find success in the areas that are important to you. And so I do coaching for leaders and teams, and I always have them take this assessment first because it gives us this kind of baseline to work with, a foundation to work with, to increase people's self-awareness, just to understand themselves a little bit better and to give them language to explain things about themselves that maybe they never realized they needed to explain. Mm-hmm. With 34 different strengths, you start to realize that when you're talking to somebody about a strength that's high for you, but it's low for them, you start to realize like, oh, we think differently. Like we don't come across, we view things from a different lens, and we definitely don't necessarily agree on the approach to certain things. Mm-hmm. And it's that kind of self-awareness that this tool or this assessment gives people that's super valuable in the coaching that I do. Had you heard of it before? I'm curious.
Yes, I'd heard of it. Yeah. I had never taken that specific assessment though. I've taken multiple others, but yeah, when you and I first had our discovery call a couple of months ago and you mentioned that, and it was, to me, it just made sense. If we're going to have you on the show to talk about this stuff, then let's actually dig in and do it. And it was interesting. It was, not totally unlike other assessments, but still a tad bit different. to me, the biggest difference was it wasn't necessarily yes or no, you know, because even if someone gives you other options other than yes or no, it's still really yes or no. And so you kind of found yourself for a few seconds going, which way do I really go with that? And of course, the assessment says to go kind of go with your first instinct, but that's not always easy because it's like, I believe in this, but I also kind of believe in that. And so it's a strange thing. One question I had that actually occurred to me when I was taking that assessment was how often, because we all change and we all grow, and we all evolve. So, you know, if someone's really looking to do a lot of that interpersonal work and that growth, regardless of their position, by the way, for anyone listening, this isn't just an assessment for leaders. This is really an assessment for anyone. It's taking inventory of where you are. But what would your suggestion be? Hey, every 5 years you take this, every 10 years, what does that kind of look like for someone really wanting to walk that path?
Yeah, great question. And I get this question all the time. So I do know people who have taken the assessment 5, 10, or 15 years apart. Mm-hmm. And I'll always ask for both of their results because I want to compare it. I've heard from Gallup, Gallup actually has a really high rate of repeatability or reliability of this assessment. Not all of these kind of self-assessments that you've heard of, like Myers-Briggs or Enneagram, mm-hmm. not all of them have gone through this process where they actually test for reliability, meaning that if you were to take the assessment today and then take it again tomorrow, it should pretty much come out the same because you haven't changed in the last 24 hours. Right. And Gallup's repeatability is actually really high compared to others, especially. So what they would say is that you shouldn't ever have to retake it really. Mm. But I have noticed through interactions with people who have taken it, the changes seem to occur when people have gone through big life events or traumatic life experiences. And so I would say if a lot has changed in your life, you've been through deeply traumatic or personal experiences, there might be some things that change. But in most people, even the people that have taken it 5, 10, or 15 years apart, when I look at their results, their top 10 strengths are what Gallup would call your dominant strengths. These mm-hmm. are the things that come so naturally to you, you don't even have to try. And those are the strengths that we leverage every day. Right. And when I compared their two results, their top 10 stayed pretty much the same. They just ended up in a different order. So their number one was their number three, or their number eight was their number two. So they shifted, but their dominant strengths in the top 10 were actually still pretty much the same, which is actually a really great indicator that you don't change a lot after your formative years, your teenage years.
Right.
A lot of your talents will stay the same most of your life.
Yeah, that's what I like to call our human DNA. And every once in a while, someone will come back at me and be like, well, and I'm like, well, but it really is our DNA. Or we could even go deeper and say that's our spiritual DNA.
Yeah.
That's kind of where we are. That's our presence. And that doesn't change. It remains. And that's why I always say human behavior stays the same. It just manifests differently.
Yes.
But and the behaviors... DNA- Yeah.
I'm sorry. I keep interrupting.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
Just that aspect or that thought of it being kind of like your human DNA is really insightful for this assessment too, because nobody likes to be put in a box. Nobody, right. And a lot of these assessments, people feel like, why are you trying to squeeze me into one of these quadrants? Because the answer is it depends. Like you,
yes,
in some situations, exactly I'm going to be this way. And in some situations, I'm going to be this way.
Yeah.
But what the Gallup assessment is trying to do in the Strengths Finder or Clifton Strengths is not to put you into these predetermined quadrants. Instead, what they're trying to do is the opposite. They're trying to come out with almost like a common language that we can use to describe the way that you are that you didn't realize you needed to describe. So it's more like a vocabulary to explain the way that you are, not to try to put the way that you are into a pre-existing framework. That's where it's so powerful, is that people can start to understand things about themselves that they didn't realize was different from other people, or that they didn't realize was unique. And it frames the way that you see the world, but gives you language to explain the way that you see the world. So it's not just what you do.
Right.
It's how you view the world. It's who you are. And that's different than, it's like you said, that's your DNA. It's the way that you are and the way that you're motivated.
Yeah. Awesome. Okay, Micah, let's jump in, man.
Shall we?
I want to tell the listeners, I'm not 100% sure where this is going to go, but I love it. And so we're just going to play it for the next, 30 minutes or so. And my prep for everyone listening would simply be, we are going to take a few different angles of this. We're going to take the interpersonal angle. We're going to take the angle of leadership. We're going to take the angle of, dipping our toe a little bit into team building and kind of how you can use your strengths to do that. I know that much. And so take notes. Micah is always open to talking with people and potentially taking on clients. So if we get through this show and you're like, wow, I could use that, or my team could use that, then we'll have Micah's information in the show notes. Connect with him, reach out with him, and you can explore that further, because interpersonal work should never stop, ever.
Agreed.
So we're just giving you another tool for your toolbox. Okay, my man, Agreed. You've got my Perfect. Results. I took the assessment. Let's rock and roll.
All right. Mitch, I love the vulnerability that you would be willing to just take the assessment. You and I have not met in advance to talk about any of these. So this is all fresh and new for you. And so I'd Yes. appreciate, I'll probably share some thoughts as we go. I'll share some of the expertise to make sure that we understand what these strengths mean. But then I'm going to ask you, like, does that resonate with you? Because sometimes I'm going to make assumptions about you based on what I know of other people who have similar strengths as you, but you are still unique. You are your own person. You're not like everybody else that has these strengths. So I'd like to hear when it does resonate, help me know that. And when it's a little different for you, tell me that too. Like, oh, but for me, it's more like this. That way we can understand that this is not, we don't want the textbook definition of these strengths. We want the Mitch definition of these strengths. Cool.
Got it.
Awesome. So you said a couple of things that I want to kind of reiterate. And that's that this is a personal growth tool. It is not just for leaders. It is not just for a professional environment. In fact, I find this kind of amusing that I'll often start with leaders and we'll get into their strengths and we'll spend a few hours just understanding what these strengths mean and what they look like in the leaders I work with. And without fail, almost every time we'll pause after our first two conversations or so about this, and they'll make a comment like, I need my spouse to take this. And I'll say, great. I think so too. Mm. They'll have their spouse take it. And even sometimes we'll bring in the spouse and we'll do a little couples coaching and just talk about, like, what's crazy is when just even a couple of weeks ago, I was working with a couple who happened to also be business partners. Mm. And I noticed that one of the strengths that was high for one of the spouse was low for the other partner. And I kind of made a comment like, oh, you're gonna approach things this way, and this is gonna be really important to you based on this strength. Mm-hmm. And then I said, but it's not important to your wife.
Right.
And I just said, that's just not how she thinks. Right. And he looked over at her like accusingly, like, no, is that really how you feel about this? And they've been married for 30 years. Mm-hmm. And she was kind of like, yeah, I don't really need what you need. And I'll have to get into this example later and talk about which strength I was talking about. But it was like, there were these aha moments that they had figured out how to make their relationship work over the 30 years they were married, but they never realized that they had language to explain this phenomenon in their relationship. Right, right. And that's where it became really powerful.
I want to expand on that. You're mentioning husband and wife, but if anyone is listening that has a business partner, you and I both, I'm sure we've done consulting,
I've done business partners.
And there's one of them is on Mars and the other one is wherever else. I don't know. And it's just frustration boiling over that is killing the business, and everyone can see it, but they don't know quite what to do with that. And so if anyone is listening or watching the video and you have a business partner or you're about to go into business, I would say be incredibly proactive. Stop your business plan, push a pause button on whatever. And I'm not just selling Micah. I believe in the stuff you do, but I'm selling the authenticity of leadership and humanity. And really, until you can get through that for any relationship, it's going to be a struggle. And so I love starting with that and giving that invitation for whoever you're married to, your business partner, your actual partner, whatever that looks like.
Well, what's so powerful about that, Mitch, and what I've seen in people, including business partners that I've worked with, when we have them both take the assessment and we talk about those different ways of seeing the world, what I've seen happen, and it doesn't always happen, it takes a level of humility mm-hmm. and maturity mm-hmm. yeah. to get this kind of result. But what I've seen happen is when one strength is high for one person and low for another, there are usually other strengths that are high for that other yes. person that are low for the other.
Yes.
And just by talking about these differences, I almost always learned that these were points of friction, mm-hmm. things that they disagreed mm-hmm. on, just like you were just describing. Yeah. And it can be extremely frustrating to work with someone who sees the world differently than yourself.
Yes.
But after a few coaching sessions and after some time, something clicks mm-hmm. for people. Mm-hmm. And when the way they used to see those differences as a problem, all of a sudden becomes an advantage. They truly see it as an asset. Like, I am better off with you as my partner because you see the world differently than me, rather than the previous perspective, which was you're wrong. And right. your way of seeing the world is a problem that I need to correct. And that is not how you work together as a team, as a partnership, as a couple, as business partners. That's the power of having a tool like this, is you start yeah. to see your differences truly as an advantage.
Well, and it ushers in, for people that are ready to receive it, it ushers in alignment. Because something like this can all of a sudden show business partners, for example, or as you're developing mm-hmm. your team, oh, I've got the wrong person sitting on the wrong seat in the wrong bus.
You got it.
Because nothing's making sense. And that's what really causes that friction when it boils down to the end of the day, is that misalignment. And so alignment skews our perspective. And, you know, that problem you're identifying and that this assessment identifies is, hey, I don't have to worry about that anymore because that's not mm-hmm. my strength. It doesn't fit my wheelhouse. It's not aligned with where I need to be in responsibility or whatever. And that, to me, for people that are really ready yeah. to receive it, it's like, oh, no wonder I don't need to be doing that job, or no wonder I do need to be taking on that responsibility. And for owners, you know, so many small businesses are run by families. I read a percentage a couple of weeks ago. I don't remember what it was, but it was like something 70% or something, if I'm not mistaken.
Wow.
It's incredibly high that are family run. And that's where a lot of that dynamic becomes so excruciating, is because, you know, you're my kid, you're going to run the family business. Well, no. I feel like for anyone listening that has any type of partnership whatsoever, but especially in business, an assessment like this, some coaching like this, can totally align you in a way that is going to bring about more success than you ever thought possible. And it's all about that alignment.
Yeah. And so alignment, I use the word alignment and fit to mm-hmm. kind of explain that match between mm-hmm. what you're best at, what energizes you, and what you're paid to do and what yeah. your occupation is. Yeah. And what you just described, like knowing that alignment is a choice, it's something that can be within your control, can be extremely liberating. There's mm-hmm. there's this idea that because there are 34 strengths, and your top 10 are your dominant strengths, the things that come so naturally to you and that also energize you. If you find a job that is leveraging your top 10 strengths on a daily basis, you're going to love that job, partly because it's what you're good at, yeah. and you're going to be more successful at the things that come naturally to you, but partly because you're going to draw energy from the kind of work yes. that aligns with your strengths. Yes. Now, from that perspective, though, that means that out of 34 strengths, if my top 10 are my dominant, that means there are 24 other strengths that I'm not necessarily great at. Right. I can probably do a lot of those things, but they don't give me the energy and satisfaction that my top strengths do. And so all of a sudden, you can kind of let that go and realize I don't have to be great at everything. And that takes a lot of maturity to realize, like, no, I don't know everything and I'm not good at everything. But there are people out there that have my low strengths in their top strengths. Yeah. And my top strengths are in their low strengths. And if I can just find the right people for the work that I'm not best at and let them complement me, their strengths complement my strengths, we will be better together than we were apart. And that's that liberating feeling of not taking on everything and feeling like I have to be good at everything, or I have to know everything, but I can rely on other people and look to people who have strengths that I don't to complement me, then we're all going to be happier doing what we love, doing what we're best at, and doing what brings us energy.
Yeah. And you think about business leaders, in America, over 99% of businesses in America are small business.
Yeah.
They make up for 99.3% of the economy. And so small business is 30 million, 500 employees or less. So 30 million in revenue, 500 employees or less. That's small business kind of line of demarcation.
Okay.
So you stop and think about that for a second. What I would say is one of the number one challenges of a small business owner or operator is that you want to control everything, or you feel like you have to control everything because you don't either know how or have the right people around you. And what I love about what you just said is when you can stand firm in your strengths and have the security, and I'm going to say the audacity, to hire people that are strong in your other 24 areas. I'm not going to say call them weakness, but just they're not your areas of strengths. When you can have the security inside yourself and the audacity to hire the people that are strong where you are not, it changes the game. But it is a sense of security, right? It's a sense of knowing I don't need to do everything. And when I think of the picture of the small business landscape in America alone, that's a radical game changer, man.
Yeah, that's hard. That's hard for a lot of people.
It's incredibly
to accept that.
It is. And the majority of small business owners, operators I've dealt with, that is the foundational problem. They're trying to do too much because they think they have to do everything. And it's like, it doesn't. And I'm, you know, even when you look at Fortune 500 companies that are based on either franchisees, et cetera, you still deal with the same issues at a micro level, even with large corporations. And so, I just think what you said is so incredibly valuable to have the security within yourself, to have that strength within yourself to go, I know I'm good at this. I'm not good at this. And so I'm going to spend my resources on finding people who are good at what I'm not good at.
That is strengths-based development. This is where the founder of this research, Don Clifton, that's why it's called Clifton Strengths. Don Clifton is the father of strengths-based psychology. He is the kind of the inventor of this idea that I'm going to focus on what I'm best at.
Yes.
Because if I leverage what I'm already good at and invest in myself to become better, my potential is just huge.
So much
to grow into that person. Mm-hmm. Whereas if I spend a lot of my energy and time trying to develop my weaknesses just to make myself well-rounded, I'll never be great at the things that come most naturally to me because all of my time and attention is spent on developing things that don't come naturally to me, my weaknesses. Yeah. So rather than doing deficiency-based development, it's strengths-based development. I work on what I'm best at so that my potential is just limitless and I can become great at what I'm already talented at. And I can leverage other people and look to other people to partner with. And together we can be great at what we do and build something wonderful. So that was a great summary of strengths-based development.
Love
now
that.
I'm going to be super disappointed if we don't at least talk about a couple of your strengths because the philosophy behind this is already so
I'm going to pause this for a second because I already feel like we may have to come back and do part two of this interview.
Okay.
And the reason I'm saying that is we're already quite a bit of time in, and I don't want to do such a long episode that people are like, oh my gosh,
agreed.
Seriously. But I'm also thinking of things as we're going along here that we didn't discuss. And a few of those things are walking people through. We've kind of set people up already, right? It's like, begin with yourself, do this work. But then what happens after that? Where do we go when we're developing a team? You know, we've alluded to focus on your strengths, surround yourself with, okay, well then where in the world do we find those people? What does that look like? So I want to shift our agenda a little bit. I think I just want to focus on the assessment.
Got it.
And what that looks like and maybe walk me through like you would with a coaching, you know, one person, a leader, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And let's save the other good stuff. And we're just going to come back and do a part two at some point really soon. We'll make that happen. That way we're not rushed because we're digging up gold, man. And I don't want to rush over it so much that we miss something of value. So
love it.
Let's get to the assessment. Let's focus on the assessment. We'll come back to part two of this interview at some point where we talk about
Deal.
How you can develop your team, how you can surround yourself with those people, and steps you can take to focus on your strengths. Is that good?
Yep. I love it.
We're all about adaptability, right? That's what the last 18 months taught us, adaptability.
I love it. Well, and that's part of the challenge here is that a lot of people take the assessment and they find it really interesting. They're like, wow, this is me. Like, this does a really good job of describing the way that I see the world and what my strengths are, but then applying it is incredibly difficult. That's where a lot of teams struggle. It's like, okay, everybody took the assessment. We're all like, really disagree. We agree. This looks really good. And it describes us, but now what? And that practical application, I think, is definitely where it would come more in handy in a future conversation.
Cool.
Did you have any from here? Did you have any questions come to mind as to what the assessment is like or anything that we've talked about that you want to check with me on before we move on?
No, it was pretty self-explanatory and, it was
okay.
Just so people know, it took about 30 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
It was pretty self-explanatory. Like I said, I don't want people to think that it was a clear cut questionnaire.
Oh, it's not. Yeah.
It's a very, you know, without giving away any of the questions, it's a very kind of do you lean toward this or lean toward that type of a situation. So yeah,
they make it even harder too, because they give you a 20-second timer in each question. And if you don't finish it, you feel it a little bit.
You're like, oh my gosh, like the Jeopardy song comes on and what is happening? Right
20 now? Seconds comes and goes like that, but it makes you go with your gut. And that's kind of what they're going for. So I think it's 177 questions that they ask, which takes 30 to 40 minutes, depending on the person. And they only provide you two options in each question. Do you feel like this option is more true most of the time for you? Or is this option more true most of the time? And what's crazy is when both of them are true and you're like, well, how do I choose? And then what's especially frustrating for people is when neither are true. And they still want you to pick, okay, even if neither of them are true, which is more true? And then they'll repeat some of the concepts and some of the strengths that are represented by those options. They'll repeat in different wording later on in the assessment, because what they're trying to do when you take the full assessment is they're trying to order it from 1 to N, from 1 to 34. Mitch's number one strength is strategic. And then at the very bottom of your list is harmony. And though that means that the answers that you gave put strategic as the strongest and harmony as the least strong, and you can expect to follow them in rank order. And that's kind of what they're doing by repeating these questions. So if anybody listening does go take the assessment, there are two things I would say. For one, do not select the neutral answer. Even when both of them seem true or both of them seem false, don't pick in the middle because they don't include it. What they want you to do is pick the one that is more like you, even if neither of them are true. So keep that in mind. And then also, I think I forgot my other also.
That's
when taking the assessment, it's there are 177 questions. And because there is a timer and you only have 20 seconds to take it, go somewhere that you're not going to be interrupted so that you can really read the question, go with your gut, and pick the response that's most natural to you.
Agreed.
If you do, they do offer two different reports. There's a cheaper report that's $20 to just get your top five. And I discourage that. I know it's more expensive. It's $50 to take the full assessment or to get the full results. But seeing your answers from 1 to 34 is such a powerful tool. I always encourage people to do that one.
I did have a question related to pricing. For someone that's running a team, are there team options? Is it $50 a person for every person? What is that? Are there other options there?
Not really. It's okay. So Gallup has their pricing and they just set it out there. I've kind of learned that if I'm working with leaders, I always have them take the full assessment, especially if it's like I work with founders and CEOs and we need to see their full report. Mm-hmm. I also work with a lot of their teams. So the leaders that report to them, and I'll ask them to take the full 34 report. Yeah. When we get down to larger teams and we're talking large groups of individual contributors, 15, 12, 20 people, that's when I would say, just take the top five for them.
Top five. Yeah.
It's a lot to expect a whole team of 20 people to know what to do with 34 strengths, and right. five is good enough. So it's kind of a way to break the cost down to not be as expensive by knowing at what level of leadership you should be using the full report versus the cheaper one.
But at the same time, I would add, I could easily see if you're running a team of 20 to 30 people, say you're in the service industry, mm-hmm. I could easily see if you took this assessment, took some coaching from Micah or whoever is an effective coach you want to work with, I could easily see this growing your profitability by 30%, easily 30%, because you're going to find the strengths of every single person. And you're going to place them again on the right seat in the bus that's going to make sense. And that satisfaction and purpose alone will increase profitability in ways you can't even
fathom.
And so spending $500 to $1,000 to increase your annual profitability by 30, 40% is a no-brainer. That's
I'm working with a startup right now that is growing exponentially. Like they're seeing so much success. They're hiring every week. And they just decided, we did a workshop last week actually, and they decided everybody that is onboarded is going to take this assessment. So it's becoming kind of a part of their culture. Like we have a strengths-based culture. We look to each other for strengths. We look to each other for partnership when other people have strengths that we don't. And we respect and honor other people's strengths when they see the world differently than we do. And they've just made it a part of their onboarding process. And part of what you just said is so true in the research that Gallup did on the Clifton strengths. It's funny how often people see an assessment like this as kind of a fluffy HR thing to do, a feel good type thing. And Gallup is like, no, actually, we have research that supports that companies that implemented strengths-based development into their organization over a couple of years, they will see a movement in true KPIs that measure things like turnover and attrition, employee satisfaction, productivity, profitability, because we're putting people in the right seat and getting them to do what they're best at. But we're also putting them in roles that they enjoy because they're good at them. It's the right person in the right seat. And so they don't want to go to another, doing the right work. Yep. They don't want to go to another company because they are appreciated for what they have to offer because their work, their assignment is aligned to what they're good at. And that's where you actually see metrics move, real financial metrics move, because the culture that you've built is around the strengths of the people, and nobody wants to go anywhere and people are good at what they do.
Love that. Love that. Let's dig into the assessment, man. Tell me what we got. Okay.
So there are, just to understand the kind of the makeup of the assessment, we've alluded to this and talked about it a little bit. The first 10. So if we were looking at your assessment right after you took it, your first 10 strengths or so are your dominant strengths. We talked about that a couple of times. Your bottom five or so are what they call lesser strengths. They don't call them weaknesses, which is what most people like to do. They want to go down to the bottom and be like, oh, what are my weaknesses? And I'm like,
nope, what do I suck at?
Yeah, what do I suck at? But that's not what that means. And the reason they call them lesser strengths is that, and actually, Mitch, maybe we'll have a chance to talk about this, is your last one is harmony. Mm-hmm. It's a lesser strength. It's not a weakness. What it means is that you are going to see the world differently and behave differently and think differently than somebody who has harmony as their number one strength, which makes it just less likely for you to see the world that way. Not that that's a weakness. It's just not you.
Right.
So everything in between from about 11 to 28 or 29, those are your supporting strengths. There are all the other strengths that fall within that area that you can leverage. It's not like you can't do those things. Right. They just may not come as naturally for you. So the environment has to be right, or the timing has to be right, or you have to be in the right mood or mindset to leverage those strengths, not like your dominant strengths, which you could just use at the drop of a hat.
Yeah.
So that's kind of how you understand the makeup of the assessment. And what's interesting is that weaknesses do come up, and I'm actually going to pull on one of your strengths to talk about this. All of your top dominant strengths kind of have a dark side and a light side.
Yeah.
When you use one of these strengths in a positive, intelligent, and mature way, that's when it's truly a strength. But every single one of them can be overused or misused to the extent that sometimes they hinder our success, and they can be something that can get us into trouble sometimes. And that balance, that's where weaknesses come in, is that even your number one strength is going to have a mature and intelligent application and a raw and unintelligent application. And your job is to understand, like, where am I on that spectrum? Mm-hmm. And how do I lean into my strengths so that it's serving me more than it's hindering me over time? So can I give an example?
Yes, do it.
All right.
Do it.
I'm going to go to your number three. I'm actually going to skip to your number three, okay, because when I talk about people's dominant strengths, I don't really care what order it's right, in. If it's in right, your top 10, I'm just going to treat it like it's number one when we're talking about it in application. So ideation is a strength that, as your number three, I imagine you feel this. It's somebody who constantly has ideas. Mm-hmm. And for people who don't have ideation, I don't think you realize, or it would be hard for you to realize just what this is like mm-hmm. for somebody with high ideation, because it never stops. It's like turning right, on the faucet. I have ideas time and time and time again. Mm-hmm. And so you'll often hear from somebody with high ideation, like, wouldn't it be cool if, or somebody should blank. Mm-hmm. And it's this idea generation that comes so naturally, they almost can't turn it off.
Right.
What's nice about that is that, like, every minute is brainstorming. You have these ideas that right, that are like, oh my gosh, we could do this. And it can be really exciting because you always have that resource to draw from. Mm-hmm. That is a positive application. When you learn, like, oh, this idea would be really good for this situation, we're going to act on this and it's going to improve our business or our team or my coaching. Whereas ideation on the negative side, when it's raw and undeveloped, can be hard to filter. If you're always speaking out loud all of the ideas that come to mind, it can be really overwhelming on other people. Mm-hmm. Because other people don't realize that you're just brainstorming. They might, right, they might think that you expect them to act on it. And now mm-hmm. as leaders, for anybody listening who's a leader, if you have high ideation and you just start saying things like, wouldn't it be cool if this, or somebody should go do this, there are people on your team that have high executing strengths.
Yes, they're going to jump on it. They're going to jump on it.
When they hear you say that, they're going to be like, the boss said, that we should do this, and I'm going to go do it now because I'm an executor.
Right.
And so all of a sudden, a couple of days later, they're going to come back and be like, I finished this thing you told me to do. And with your ideation, you're going to be like, no, I was just throwing out ideas. I didn't expect you to do that.
Right.
That's kind of the balance that you experience, is sometimes your strengths need to be controlled and dialed back mm-hmm. because it's not the right time mm-hmm. or they're not the right place. And sometimes your strengths need to be leaned into because it is the right time or it is the right place. So what did you think about ideation when I said that?
Yeah, I want to add to that. For anyone who struggles with, which we all do at some level, but for anyone who really struggles with mental health, emotional health, maybe some type of abuse, spiritually, emotionally, mentally, I will say that oftentimes, especially for people that deal with mental, emotional health. See, for me, the dark side of ideation is not the picture you painted. Oh, I've known people that are that way. Okay. For me, the dark side of ideation is keeping it in and not having an outlet. Yes. So I'm going to be really vulnerable with our listeners here for a second, because I really want people to get the point of this exercise and really the superpower that it can give you when you have that self-awareness. Anytime someone who is an idealist, we think of actors and we think of musicians and we think of these creators, the great Robin Williams comes to mind. Anytime someone of that personality trait takes their life by suicide, or we hear them just totally deconstructing and self-sabotaging. Mm-hmm. That's what I relate
to. That's what that looks like.
As someone who deals with mental health, depression, et cetera. And so I actually fall more from an ideation standpoint. I actually fall more on the side of keeping it in.
Yeah.
And it just starts to over, like when you say the word ideation, the first word that comes to my mind is overwhelmed.
Yeah.
because you just keep it in and you don't speak it enough. So the trick I've learned over the years is I actually have idea books. Good. And I have a couple of them that are strategic. And so I write my ideas that I could potentially come back to and implement. But then I have other idea journals that I just write my latest movie script idea, because I get those constantly that I will probably never take never action do. On and I'm okay with. But the exercise is to get those out and have an outlet for it, because I know the faucet never turns off.
That's it.
And so to get it out where it's not flooding over, but I also don't feel pressured to share them with everyone, because that is another key point that you made that I want to reiterate, regardless of what strength we're talking about. Without self-awareness, you kind of become an imposer of that strength, and you now lay the burden of that strength on other people who shouldn't carry that burden. And so you have to have that outlet of the dark side to where you can somehow have you know, get that out of your system in a way and have that balance. And so for me, ideation specifically, I think overwhelm. I also think magic. But I think overwhelmed because of my experience in life. And so
and it comes with both.
Does come with both. And that's why finding that's that all outlet of these. And how you can, you know, whether it's going to a therapist or having a friend or using journals like I do, whatever it is, it's getting that out. And once you get it out, you learn to release it and you learn to be okay with letting it sit where it sits. That's an amazing thing. So
that's, there's so much that you just said. That's just fantastic. And what I want to say first is you're not alone. What you just described is very much what people with high ideation have expressed to me before, because it's not that high for me. I really admire that strength and I wish that I had that kind of flow of ideas, but it does come with that challenge. And your word outlet is a really great way to explain. You can't just let all of your ideas out, but you can't keep all of them in either. Mm-hmm. And the number one thing that I recommend to people with high ideation is journals, just like you said, somewhere to put these ideas, because you can't offload on everybody else. They can't handle that. That's overwhelming for them, but you can't keep them in your head because for one, that's overwhelming to you.
Yeah.
But for two, if you expect yourself to remember your good ideas, what I've learned from other people with high ideation is it comes
and goes.
And it goes.
Yep.
It's not going to stick around because there's another idea in the queue that's pushing it out. And so having somewhere to put your ideas, even if you never go back to it, can allow you to let go and be free to take on the next great idea. Sometimes people will build in routines where they do go back over their ideas at the end of the day.
Yes.
And they themselves are a great filter because they'll look over their ideas and be like, oh, these actually really suck. Like, I don't even like those ideas anymore.
Nope. Yeah,
but then they circle the ones that are like, that's still a good idea. And I want to take action on that. And sometimes this outlet, when you're aware of it and you put in some routine that helps you control it and apply it in a positive way, that's when it becomes a strength. And you've learned that the hard way, not through coaching and working with somebody who understands ideation from a strengths perspective, but through experience, you've learned I need these journals because that's how my ideation stays healthy. Mm-hmm. Looked like you had a thought.
And I want to add to that, the key to truly honing in on your strength is clarity of mind. And it's just like going to the gym. You know, there's days you just show up at the gym because you know you just have to show up, but your workouts rarely go good on those days, but you showed up. And showing up is what matters most. But then there's days you show up and you have real clear goals. You have real clear expectations. You have clarity of mind. You're fully present. And that's when you show the full strength capacity. And so regardless of what strength we're talking about, it's having that outlet, being able to deal with that counterbalance, because what that gives you is the clarity of mind for the moments that your strength really needs to shine through. And it's going to happen more when you have that clarity of mind.
I'm going to summarize what you just said using three pillars that are foundational in the coaching that I do. It's the same thing you just said, but I use these three pillars. The first is self-awareness. Mm-hmm. If you don't realize that these are your strengths, if you don't know that there's something to be improved, it's like if it ain't broke, we don't fix it.
Yes.
It's like if you don't know that there's a problem, you don't address it. And so self-awareness is kind of that first step to even knowing what you have to work with. And then the second pillar is reflection. Yes. We have to have a feedback loop yes. to recognize, like, as we go through your strengths or as you learn about your strengths, some of them you might be like, you know what, this strength is getting me into trouble more than I want it to. Yeah. And I would rather be on the mature strength side, but I'm on the raw getting right. me in trouble side more often than not. And that reflection allows you to get to the third pillar, which is choice. Mm. When you realize like, this isn't where I want it to be. And maybe sometimes it's actually going to be like, I'm actually really good at this. Some of your strengths are going to be really healthy, really mature. They won't require a lot of personal development or investment in, but most of the time you're going to think, as I've reflected on what I know about myself and what these strengths look like in me, then it becomes up to you to make a choice. If right. you recognize in the moment, like, man, my ideation is going wild right now. Mm-hmm. And you can pause and reflect and think, is now the right time to lean into my ideation and let right. these ideas flow? Because maybe I'm in a brainstorming session with my team yeah. and that's the perfect place to just let your ideas flow. Or am I in a position where I should dial it back mm-hmm. because it's not the right time or it's not mm-hmm. the right place and I need to control this today? Mm-hmm. That third choice is how you learn to develop your strengths to work in your favor more than to hinder you. So yeah. I know we've only talked about one strength, but that is a really great example of what that can do for you and kind of both sides, the yeah. dark side and the light side of all of these strengths and how they can serve us.
Let's kind of begin wrapping up by pick out something else that maybe really stood out to you on that assessment that I took or something that you kind of as a touch point you'd like to hit on.
Yeah. Oh man, there are a number of them, but let's see. So self-assurance is one that kind of sticks out to me. It's your number six that, and there are a number, we're going to have to come back to these, Mitch, but self-assurance stuck out to me because it's the second least likely to show up in somebody's top strengths. It's not oh, very wow. common. Yeah. Wow. So it's interesting to point those out every once in a while when somebody has something that is a little bit more unique, because I mean, part of the self-awareness factor of all of this is that your ideation has probably been a challenge for you in the past that you may have struggled with and thought like, why am I like this? Like, this isn't normal, but it actually is normal. There are a lot of people who have the ideation strength, and it might be comforting to know, like, I'm not the only one that experiences this, including the dark side of it, like you just described. Right. But with something like self-assurance, it's also kind of uplifting to think there aren't a lot of people like this. Like, this right. is me, right. this is unique to me. And so self-assurance is in one word, it's confidence, but it's this internal confidence that you make good decisions. It's a mm-hmm. confidence in yourself. Like, I know what I'm doing. I believe in myself. It may not always be expressed outwardly in your behaviors, right. but it's felt inwardly. And so someone with high self-assurance will approach something fully believing that they're capable of it. Mm-hmm. And then even if they approach something, attempt something, and it doesn't work out, they'll look back on that decision and find the good in it. You know, it's like, yeah, yes. maybe I yes. failed at this thing, but I made the best decision I could with the information I had at the time. And I right. learned a lot from it. Right. And so there's no regret. They don't look back on decisions with regret. It's like, right. no, I chose this. And it was a good thing. And I wouldn't regret that I did this. It's that internal belief in oneself. Does that resonate with you? Do you feel that?
Yeah, totally. And that's kind of always just been there. You know, I can't say it was a watershed moment. I was right. kind of the teenager that teachers often called cocky. And I think I think the difference between an adult calling a teenager cockiness and an adult not calling another adult cocky, but calling them confident, and they do the same behavior, I think it's more of an age discrepancy than, but as teenagers, we're pretty brute yeah. and we don't care. But at the same time, I can just think of stories in my head as a teenager that I won't share now, but where that did kind of get me in trouble. But at the same time, you know, what I always tell people is, it's those moments that adults getting frustrated at me kind of told me that I was on the right track.
Yeah.
Because along with that self-assurance is also a little vein of rebellion that says, no, I don't have to do it your way.
Right.
And that's a huge correlation to self-assurance is I am original. I am the only person. I'm the only me that there is. And so you might tell me I'm doing it the wrong way, but my question is, well, who said it's wrong? Or, you know, because I have an idea of what this looks like, and that's how I'm going to go. Again, as a teenager, that gets you in trouble. As an adult, you're now an innovator, and you're like, oh, wow, let's ask that guy. And it's like, well, what happened to that 30 years ago, you know? But so, yeah, but it's just kind of always there, you know? It's kind of always, it's always been there. It doesn't, there's moments that you all have that self-doubt. We all do. Yeah. But then it just kind of comes back. It's like, no, I'm going to get through this. I can get through this. It's going to be okay. And so, yeah, 100%.
Good. Well, and I think that that's an indicator to me, what you just described about your self-assurance is an indicator to me that you've developed that in a pretty mature way, because people who do lean into their self-assurance too much can do it at the expense of relationships and other people, and they can push people around because they believe in themselves and they want to get their way. It can be a self-serving strength. Yes. That doesn't consider the needs of other people. And you didn't describe any of those negative aspects of self-assurance. I think because you actually have some really great other strengths like positivity and connectedness that I think work really well with your self-assurance to make people important. And you're not going to sacrifice that aspect of your life and your relationships in order to get what you want. And so our strengths do work together in a cool dynamic that makes you even more unique, that can sometimes temper each other. The strengths can temper each other to be more healthy or less healthy. And I hear some really mature self-assurance in you and less of the negative. So as you, I mean, think about between now and the next time we talk, the goal I would have for you is to look at the rest of your top 10 strengths, read the definition, and just start to pay attention for them in your life and see if you can recognize like, oh, I think that's my blank strength in action happening right now. Or this is my self-assurance. This is my ideation. And just come to increase that self-awareness that I was talking about so that at some point through reflection and learning on these strengths, you start to realize in the moment that you do have a choice as to how you apply your strengths and see opportunities to lean into certain strengths and dial back other strengths. It's actually hard. It's hard to get there, but it's well worth that kind of learning journey.
I love that that was kind of your closing statement, Micah, because one thought I had for our listeners as you're talking about all this is it takes practice. And I don't know that you ever really arrive, because there's always room to grow. There's always room to evolve and to learn. And so it just takes practice and start somewhere. That's if I was wanting to get a point to anyone, it is just start. And if that starting for you is taking an assessment, the Clifton Strengths assessment, if that start for you is talking to Micah and looking at coaching for your business, whatever that starting point is, the most important step is the first step. And then the next important step is the next step. And, and that's okay. And that takes practice. So Micah, this has been great, man.
It was fun to talk.
This is amazing. And I know people are going to get incredible value from this. We promise we will come back and do a part two as soon as we can, because I'm excited to shift into applying this specifically to leadership and to developing teams, because this was full of gold, and it's going to be even better the further we go on this conversation. So Micah, thanks for coming on. Before we wrap up, tell people where they can connect with you or reach out to you. We'll also put those in the show notes, but tell them as well.
Great. Definitely go to the show notes, because my name is spelled funny and people get it wrong all the time. So you can find me on LinkedIn. My name is Micah Lawrence. And Lawrence is spelled unlike you would expect. So I'm very active on LinkedIn, love to connect with people there. You can also go to my website, micahlawrence.com, if you want to learn more about working with me.
Awesome. That's L-O-R-E-N-C for those that are paying attention. So L-O-R-E-N-C. awesome. Yeah, we'll put everything in the show notes. So Micah, thanks for coming on the Mitch Gray Show. We'll have you on again soon where we can dig even deeper into all of this good stuff. So
brothers and sisters. Thanks, Mitch.
Thank you for listening to the show. Please subscribe anywhere you listen to podcasts. Subscribe to the YouTube channel where we do put most of our videos, and we're adding more content. I should say we're working on adding more content. We've got some cool stuff in the pipeline. So speaking of ideation, we have some great ideas coming for you. So Make sure and order. You can pre-order my new book. Actually, when this episode's out, you'll be able to order it. I'm behind myself. So go order my new book right now, How to Hire and Keep Great People. And interestingly enough, not in the context of Clifton Strengths or Gallup, but much of the information and ideas that you heard today are echoed in the book as well in a different context. So that's why I like having great people like Micah on, because we are on the same page. So we hope you're well. We hope you have a great day, and we will talk to you soon.